Welcome to the Atheist Experience. Today is Sunday, September 1st, 2019. Happy Labor Day weekend. I'm your host, Don Baker. Today with me is co-host Jenna Bilk.
Hello.
How are things with you?
Pretty good.
Okay. Enjoying the weekend, a long weekend?
Yeah, I went to the coast and went fishing.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Catch anything?
I caught two trout and a red.
Oh, okay.
And I am really sore because I don't know if you've ever been fishing for hours and hours, but it's hard physical work.
You're not the right color for having been fishing.
I have to wear a UV sunblocked shirt and a hat and glasses, and I have to get completely covered.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you survived that.
Yeah.
The Atheist Experience is a production of the Atheist Community of Austin, a Texas-based nonprofit educational organization promoting the separation of religion and government and positive atheist culture. A little factoid today, our first Atheist Experience episode aired October 19th, 1997. Wow. And we are the oldest continuously operating atheist TV program ever.
Score.
Okay, score. After the show today, at 6:30 or so, if you're watching streaming or whatever, you're welcome to come down and hang out with us, with the hosts, crew, and members of our live studio audience. And we are at the ACA Freethought Library, 1507 West Koenig Lane. Parking would be on the street behind the building, perhaps. And we generally feed the masses. I think we're going to have Chinese food today. But we do take donations to offset the expenses. This is kind of a community building thing, and we enjoy having folks down to chit-chat. Special announcements. The Bat Cruise weekend is coming up in, 3 weeks. The Bat Cruise itself is September 21st at 6 p.m., and that is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at our products page on our website. And we also have other events that weekend. We will have a pre-cruise lecture, which is free and open to the public, and the speaker will be David Warnock, who has been on the show before. We will have some other events, and some of them formal, some of them informal, going on in the weekend. And we invite out-of-towners to come down and hang out with us and have meals and get to know folks, and it's kind of a good excuse to go see the bats because they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
And not every year can you see them well because they kind of do their crazy thing and emerge and go hunting for insects and good stuff. So, but we love them. So today I wanted to talk a little bit. You don't have a topic, right? Today I wanted to talk a little bit about our Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who a couple weeks ago suffered from chest pains and had to have a stent put in to relieve a blockage. And to his credit, Dan thanked the doctors for diagnosing and addressing the problem so quickly.
Hmm.
So they deserve the credit. But Dan Patrick is a religious nut of the First Order, and it would be most likely that he would just thank God or Jesus and screw the doctors. He has claimed to have a special relationship with God, and in all things he does, he checks with God first. That's the kind of Christian he is. We'll come back to that in a second. We've had a number of shootings here in Texas. On August 3rd, we had a gunman shoot 22 people at a Walmart in El Paso. And Saturday, a shooter in Midland, Odessa area killed 7 and injured another 21. And also Friday morning, we had a shooting here in Austin that was a single victim, and the suspected shooter is still at large. And Dan Patrick's response for these shootings is, first off, he blames video games.
Oh, my God.
Because you kill people in video games, and of course, that must desensitize you to killing. He blames bullying on cyber media, which I'm a little sympathetic to that. He also says that we have stopped prayer in school and we have stopped saluting our flag, and that we can't, and students cannot talk about these things in classrooms. And these claims are false based on a recent PolitiFact article on that. He says, I believe we need to have a commission or blue ribbon panels, although he says those don't generally do anything. And here's the money quote. As long as we continue to only praise God and look to God on Saturday morning and kick him out of the town square and our school on the other 6 days of the week, what do you expect? What do we expect? That's what he says. Well, I think by now we've empirically determined that prayer is a proven failure at stopping mass shootings. So we can kind of give that up and, you know, close the door on that. And if Dan would like to pray and fast for each victim to prove us wrong, I encourage him to do so. As an engineer, I would suggest that if it doesn't work, we could double the continuous prayer and fasting time, say from 1 day per victim to 2 days per victim. And on each iteration, we could just keep going until success is achieved. So that would be a way to figure out how much prayer is actually necessary. And we know that by being God's special toady, Dan's prayers will be answered. And it could be that by the sixth or seventh such iteration, we'll have a successful resort of some sort. Okay. But unfortunately, back in the real world, Dan Patrick is chairman of the Texas State Senate, and he is in a unique position to actually do something. And if only he were competent like his doctor, or if only his doctor were as competent as he is. As atheists, we should complain about the do-nothing, self-serving exercises like prayer and demand some real action. Now, to his credit, Governor Greg Abbott is at least trying to do something about the shootings and such. I don't know how successful he'll be or whether he's really doing it in earnest, but at least he's trying to do something. And remember, a mass murder is never an appropriate time to worship a mass murdering God. So, all right. So what do you say we take some calls?
All right, let's go for it.
We have a couple of callers here. Let's see. So Armender, you are a polytheist, and you believe that many gods explains why the world is the way it is. Is that right? Armender.
Hello?
You are on the air.
I don't think he can hear us.
I don't think he can hear us. Well, I'm going to put
you... Oh, yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Here we go.
Oh, yes. My name is Armender Bhaskar. I just wanted to call in and, basically... I think sometimes there's a false dichotomy on your show, and I understand there's sometimes two types of questions or two types of arguments people when they call in to advocate for God or things like that. And it usually is either they're trying to prove God or they're trying to show that belief in God is moral. And today I'd like to call in and just show that the particular belief I'm advocating is moral, because going about trying to prove every single God, I mean, that's a discussion for a different time. So basically, I think
So you're calling to tell us what's moral?
Well, I'm calling on basically to say that belief in gods is not an immoral belief. It's not a lot of times people say belief in God and monotheism is tyrannical. A lot of people say, you know, and they'll say that it's dictatorship. And I just want to say, I think that polytheism, if you think about it, it's like democracy. You have a lot of different powers controlling our lives, a lot of different things. And when things don't happen the way we like it, well, you know, sometimes not all the powers agree about how things should happen.
So it sounds like the Swiss Army knife of excuses, though, right? Because you either prayed to the wrong God, or you didn't pray the right way, or some other God got in the way, or you know, there's all sorts of, you know, rationalizations that you can make that way, right?
Well, what I'm trying to say is I don't think this issue is addressed. It's always you either believe in God or you don't believe in God, and that's it. Like that seems like I hear that a lot.
We focus a lot on monotheism, you know, that's just because our audience tends to be that. But you know, polytheism, yeah, does have, you know, all sorts of explanatory power. You just make up another God when you need it for whatever. But what we're really interested in is whether it's true or not, whether the beliefs are true or warranted.
The thing is that the atheist experience is about what the atheists believe and don't believe and the lack of it. Right. And to us, monotheism, polytheism, you know, all of it, it's all woo. It's all just as equally... not proven to be true yet, so.
Right, but as I explained when I called in, I'd like to separate the two, because, I mean, it's not really fair, because, you know, some people call in on the show Let me finish. Some people call in and on the show and start just giving a whole plethora of arguments, and no one can get to all of them. You know what I mean? So right now, I called in to say my basic argument is that polytheism is not immoral, as because okay. I noticed sometimes.
Okay. If that's the only point you want to make, then I guess I'm okay with that.
Same.
Do you believe, but
I don't think that any of it's immoral.
You know,
you have made arguments in the past that monotheism is immoral.
I'm an anti-theist because the particular God where you worship it and you follow it and you sort of have to do something for it to in order to make it better or make it happy. The God that you can trade with tends to be the source of a lot of immorality or a lot of problems because you end up the only thing you can trade is screwing up your neighbor or killing them or whatever, and because apparently God's too lazy to do that himself. So that's the type of God that I really loathe and despise.
Don, when you say you're an anti-theist, does that mean that you're anti-God or anti-religion or what?
Oh, anti-belief in you know, the good question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I would suggest that you're probably more of an anti-monotheist. You're not really anti-theist.
Why would you assume that?
Because he was giving, you know, examples of what he doesn't like, and they seem to be more of what you would describe as a monotheistic god.
Sure.
And so, a polytheistic god, so you're not really an anti-theist, you're anti-monotheist.
Well, that's probably what's motivating me, but, you know, as far as the evidence and such, we don't have any evidence for any gods whatsoever. So,
saying that polytheism is not immoral. Are you saying that monotheism is immoral?
Well, all I'm arguing is that you will often say that theism is immoral. So I'm just trying to say.
Has anybody said that on the show?
Is monotheism?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's one of our main arguments or anything.
You just said it.
He said that it's.
I was talking about a particular type of God that you would trade with in order to appease it. And what are you going to trade?
And you find that objectionable or immoral, whatever negative term you want to use.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying to say that theism in general is not immoral because polytheism is not immoral I'm assuming. Can you think of an objection to polytheism?
You know, if you're operating from an incorrect model of the world, you know, a lot of these God beliefs factor into other aspects of your life. And so, you know, for example, you might, instead of taking somebody to a hospital, you might pray and waste your time and you might harm them by doing that. And so it's hard to draw direct lines. But you know, anytime you're operating in a world where you're not operating on correct assumptions, then you have some more potential to do harm. And because God beliefs are so pervasive and so entrenched and so impactful of other beliefs that it can be a real tough nut to crack as far as that.
The potential harmfulness or potentially immoral or potentially wrong is not the same as being wrong or bad. It's because there's a particular example where you can think of where some particular type of belief in a particular polytheist belief might be bad in some sort of situation. Doesn't mean the general belief is wrong. I mean, I could come up with people that certain atheists that believe things that are wrong. You know, like it doesn't exactly just saying a particular aspect of some religion. And I'm not necessarily talking about religion now. You know,
can I ask you a question? Do you think that beliefs can be right or wrong?
That's a good question. It depends on what you mean by right or wrong. You mean it's factually right or wrong, or that
I'm asking. However, you're using the word.
Well, I don't know. I was basically asking for the way you use the word when you say that it's wrong or bad. So I guess what you mean is the way it's used. So I would say the utility of it. So I would say that yes, beliefs could be harmful. I would rather use a more specific word like harmful or helpful as opposed to right or wrong because it's kind of ambiguous as to what we mean.
So okay. That helps. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I don't have an argument with you, so.
Yeah. I don't know. Feel free to call back. I think we've kind of aired your point.
Yeah.
And all right. Take care, Arminder.
Thanks for calling.
Bye. All right. Let's take, let's see, trying to figure out how to work the phone here. Gills in UK.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
How are you?
Hello, Don. Hello, Jenna.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I want to discuss the existence of a creator?
Yeah.
Do you have any evidence for that?
Okay. I want to acknowledge the evidence. The creator, in my opinion, is the biosphere.
The creator is the biosphere?
Creator of what exactly?
The biosphere, or the ecosystem. The system that creates plant lives, life organism that we are part of.
Do we have to worship the biosphere?
No. I'm not talking religion here.
Okay.
Observation. Observation.
So you're talking more specifically about the creation of life on this planet. Is that correct?
Yes. And it's either call it a creator or an engine of creation. It is the most fantastic nanomachine ever known to man.
Sure. And I have an issue with the creator word, because that seems to imply agency.
Personification.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. I like your other term, which was...
Biosphere?
creation engine?
I'm okay with engine of creation, if that's what the way you wanted to express it.
Okay.
If you look at it, we deal with it every day. And it's the actual mystery of life.
So what is the biosphere?
The biosphere is also known as the ecosystem. It's everything.
Okay.
It's the engine of creation. It's what has, from the beginning, what created plants, plant life, animals, insects, everything that is alive today. The creator of life, if you like.
So there is a little bit of a circularity here. I wanted to point out that... If the biosphere were different and created life, it would still be the biosphere. And if it were different and didn't create life, it would not be the biosphere. And so you're sort of defining the biosphere as the thing that created, but you're not necessarily pointing at something that is kind of on its own. You're defining it in terms of the fact that it created life, right?
Yeah, as something that has happened at some point in time, that in spite of all our scientists, we comprehend it to a point, up to a point, but there are still many mysteries to explain out.
Right.
When we're faced with this, what I call nanomachine or engine of creation, are we dealing with a self-generating computer program, phenomenon?
Are you calling the biosphere a self-generating computer program?
Yes, when you talk, isn't it what the DNA?
You think that the ecosystem of our planet is actually a self-generated computer program?
You could view it like that.
Why would you think that? Why should I think that?
Why, if you look at how the it constructs life, you take a plant, for instance, and it produces leaves, it produces stems, and it's done it. It does it at molecular level.
So what's that got to do with the computer program?
Because it's based on DNA.
DNA provides a recipe that orchestrates the development of living tissue and that sort of thing. And I don't know. I don't know if it's worth investing a lot of awe and wonder in it beyond the sort of awe and wonder of the fact that it does something pretty cool. I don't know that we need to sort of imbue it with other magical sort of capabilities beyond what it's doing, right?
Yeah, I'm not talking about magic here. I'm talking about observation.
Okay.
Of what's happening? There's something happening that we can observe every day.
What's happening?
Something that is observable and predictable.
What's happening?
You have plants. You have very sophisticated.
We have life, right?
Organism. Sorry.
Are you talking about life happening every day?
I mean, don't you acknowledge the high level of sophistication that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it, though.
Yeah.
I'm confused.
So what does this have to do with atheism? That's what I'm kind of missing the point here.
It doesn't. The fact that I'm an atheist does not prevent me from acknowledge the existence of a mechanism that could.
Okay.
So you're trying to validate atheists in that we see the trees too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Not, okay. So I'm sorry. I just had no idea where you were going with this. You're just like, okay. Okay. Cool.
There's so much
about this planet that we can learn that is fascinating. Yeah. That we don't need to say, oh, there's magic behind it.
Yeah, I'm not making that claim. What I'm saying is that I'm just expressing humility.
Okay.
In front of something that is. Take for instance antibiotics. We play chess with this phenomenon every day. I mean, our scientists do it. When we created antibiotics, over a certain amount of
antibiotics. Sorry.
Over a certain amount of decades after using, and that's something that saved many lives and cured many diseases. It has it has come up with superbugs, so it's responding. It's giving. It's responding to what we do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm asking these. I'm asking myself these questions. I mean, is this? I mean, I call it a computer program because of its level of sophistication.
But I define a computer program as a program that works because a computer is making it work.
Yeah, there's a designer involved there, and
I'm not talking about a designer. Nowadays, I mean, computer can actually self-program. I mean,
like a self-designed computer program. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
It's like The Sims, but we didn't make it.
So I would agree with you that as atheists, there are a lot of things to be have a sense of awe and wonder about mm-hmm. in the world, and certainly biology is a big one. You know, the cosmos and all the astrophysics stuff is another big one. Yeah. Mathematics is very cool and mm-hmm. interesting too. And, you know, we all, I guess, agree that we don't need a God for that. And,
No.
I think I feel like, when I go to New York, I go to the science museum there because that's kind of my pilgrimage place, you know. And so I feel like that's something that I want to go sort of pay homage, although there's nothing there to pay homage to exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I certainly have those feelings myself, and I think properly directed, we can. You know, we can appreciate the complexity and intricacy of the universe and try to learn more and try to take better care of it, like our planet. Using those things.
What prompted some of my thoughts is when many years ago I had I went on a holiday in Wales in a place called Lampeter, and I stayed in a bed and breakfast there, and in the dining area, and where I was having breakfast, there was by the window there was this magnificent plant. I didn't know what it was, but it looked absolutely healthy and beautiful. And I asked the owner of the the hotel what plant it was, and she told me it's a money plant. And I she said, "Well, do you want a shoot of that plant?" And I said yes. And she gave me wrapped it up in a piece of newspaper, put some peat at the bottom, and I took it home with me. So when I arrived home, I just found a pot and I planted it and I nurtured it and I watered it. That was in 1982, and I still have this plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grown, yeah, magnificently. It's a tree now.
Wow.
And not a money tree, but it's...
you can call it that.
Yeah. No, it has yet to give me, foreign currencies or anything like that.
Right.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, thanks for calling.
It's just that over the years, it's just produced this I've done is just gave it water.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and it has produced this this plant, and moving on to another aspect of what we could call, I mean, I'm sorry you don't like the word creation, but, you know, when we go to sleep, the brain creates a virtual reality world that where, you know, everything that we know is created from scratch.
The subconscious? I mean,
the whole process is absolutely, we take it for granted, but it's absolutely
it's fascinating.
Jaw-dropping. Yeah,
yep.
Fascinating.
Yep. The brain is certainly something to be have awe about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Gil, I'm sorry. I'm gonna let you go. We've got some other callers to go to, but I do appreciate your call.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. All right. Let's see. Let's take Daniel in Tennessee. You are getting to the edge of atheism, huh? You're starting to peek out from under the tent, huh?
Yeah. Definitely.
So how's that going for you?
Well, interesting. I feel like kind of like the veil's been lifted, you know, a little bit. Still have some, anchors or reserve about it. But one of the things is with the problem of evil. So some people say that God is all good, but I don't know if ever really agreed with that. My question is, so if you have a God that is capable of both good and evil, wouldn't that be more probable than just a good God?
Sure. But I don't know. I don't know of any gods. So you know, you could have a universe that has no preference one way or the other and is indifferent. And that seems to be the universe that we're in.
Why do you think that there's any gods at all, good or bad?
Well, I've been going over like the reasons the past few months that I believe in a God. And maybe I am adding an extra step to it. But I feel like a God, again, capable of both good and evil, is more probable than just a strictly good, you know, all-knowing, omniscient.
Maybe, but why do you think that there are any gods at all?
I think he's letting go of his God belief, and so that's kind of a core thing. But
the reason I'm asking is because I want you to think about it. I want you to try to answer the question, because thinking about that question is what helped me understand why I did, because I didn't actually think I had never thought about why I thought that there was a God until the very, very end of my deconversion. That was like the final tipping point of me finally accepting in my head completely that there's no reason to believe it, because I was like, well, why do I believe it? Well, for me, I believed it because everybody around me did. Everybody that I knew did, you know, and so then I looked into those reasons and I was like, okay, is that a good reason to believe something? Is this a good reason to believe something? So that's why I'm asking, why do you think that there are any gods? That's because good or bad, I mean, we could go into that, but I'd like to find the God before I try to decide whether it's good or bad.
Right. And that is a great question. I feel like it might be the same with me. I mean, I was raised in it, steeped in it since I was, you know, born, basically.
I
feel like
that's understandable.
Yeah, I feel like it's just kind of understood, especially in this area. It seems like, you know, I'm sure there's other people who are going through the same thing as me in this area.
Do you know any atheists?
Like, you know, no. I mean, I have spoken with some on the internet, but not in person.
Well, you know, having some folks to talk to and reach out to is helpful. I had another kind of slant on your situation, and that was, you know, if there's a God that's sort of good and evil, it's almost like the God is sort of an agent, or like a, you know, space alien that with magic powers that may be beyond our understanding. But it sort of raises the question of why worship it. Right. And, you know, if it's got its own agenda and it's not necessarily set in relation to us, there's this question of, you know, how do we interact with such a thing, right? Do we treat it as, you know, it's got its own agenda and we kind of distrust it until we know better? Or do we say, oh, we want to suck up to this God because it's got power and, you know, it's going to do things for us or whatever? Those would seem to be the main, or maybe go mate with it or something, you know, but those seem to be the human responses to these things in science fiction.
Right.
I think that both of those can be helpful because I think that it's important to kind of loosen the idea, because if it makes more sense, you're right. If it makes more sense that you shouldn't worship it, it might be easier to let go of the idea that you should hold on to it. Because if you do think that you should worship it, then you're more likely to be like, oh, no, I have to keep the faith. I have to keep the faith. Right?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, if there is a God, then I mean, I think you wouldn't want to go to hell, or I mean, that, I guess that's another conversation in itself about afterlife. But I mean, if there is a God, you know, we don't want to, you know, go to hell.
Right. So, have you ever Googled logical fallacies? Have you ever looked up like a list of logical fallacies?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have. I'm not that familiar with them.
I'm not yet either. Actually.
Did I break?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and each one of them it's hard for me to wrap my brain around understanding, so it's going to take me a while before I understand all of them, and I may have even used one or two on this show, and if I did, I'm sorry. But if you look up the list of the fallacies, you'll find that that's one of them, is believing it just in case you might be wrong. Do you know which fallacy that is?
Okay.
I'm not sure which fallacy.
You might call that Pascal's wager.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm new to this. Yeah. But yes, that's a fallacy, is to believe it just in case you might be wrong.
Right.
It's not reasonable. And so if do you understand why it's unreasonable to believe in a fallacy, or like to use fallacious reasoning?
Right. Yes. I have seen a couple of the shows and I know a little bit about fallacies. And
cool. I don't want to assume that you do. So.
Right. Yeah, I'm a little familiar with it, but basically, when I started questioning all this stuff, I was introduced by a friend about Calvinism. I don't know if you know a whole lot about that, but it's quite different than Baptist, which is what I was raised in. But basically, you know, God is this all-knowing, but he's really not all-loving. He kind of does his own thing, and you know, you want to follow him. It's a very in-depth the TULIP, Calvinism. There's the whole acronym for it, but it
predestination,
it's
right?
Kind of throwing me off.
Yeah, I think that one of the big tenets of Calvinism is predestination, where you know, it's already been decided whether you're going to heaven or not, and it doesn't matter what you do. And so it's almost against free will in a lot of respects, that you know, whatever has already been decided. You know, from my perspective, you know, there's about as many notions of God as there are people. And mankind has invented hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of gods that we've got cataloged, and lots of different variations and such. And my frustration is it's relatively easy to invent a theology, but there's work in sort of proving it true or providing some evidence for it. And so that's why we're kind of big on evidence for theological propositions.
Right. Yeah, I hear you. And I feel like when I started questioning, I started down this road to, you know, eventually became an atheist. But I feel like this whole Calvinism really like threw a knot in it, or, you know what I mean? Like, but because it's starting to maybe throw me off, like, I mean, not that I was going to go one way or the other, but it's like it's harder for me to let go of theism now more than I've, you know, been studying a little bit more about, you know, this predestination and, you know, not necessarily an all-loving God, but, you know, you just seek to be counseled by him and, you know, follow him and all this stuff.
Right, so. Right. So it sounds like you're kind of in a mode of searching a little bit and trying to sort of figure out what fits.
Yes, definitely. I really am.
Okay. Well,
That's admirable.
Yeah, I think that's a good process, and I would encourage you to keep doing that. And maybe just not look at one or two things, but look at a wide range would be my recommendation. And we have on our website an area devoted to testimonials, which is a bunch of folks that have belonged to the group at various times have written up kind of how they came to be an atheist. And one of the really common themes is that it takes many years. And a lot of folks sort of have nagging doubts, and they start pursuing them and understanding them, and these doubts grow, and they tend to go explore a lot of things. And sometimes this process can take 7, 8, 10 years, if you apply yourself. So don't be hard on yourself that you're sort of searching and that you're kind of mulling things over and it's taking some time, because I do think these are big and complex questions, and it does take some time to really sort of go through it. How about you, Jenna? How long did it take you to kind of?
From the moment that I started questioning to the moment that I finally clicked, I probably took 5 or 6 years.
Thankfully, the younger people seem to go through it a little faster than the older folks.
Well, but the internet is extremely helpful with that. Use the internet. Yes. Talk to people. Reach out. Meet some atheists. Yeah. Yep. Please look in the chat on this forum. I bet you that it's blowing up right now with people that want to reach out to you and talk to you.
Okay.
So please.
Anything else, Daniel?
Honestly, a year ago, no matter what anybody said, you could not convince me that there wasn't a global flood. I mean, honestly, no matter what, but I started studying that, and that's kind of how uh-huh. it's led me to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's just through questions.
There's a lot of theories.
I do agree with you. I think evidence is the best way to find out if something is true or
I agree.
Not
right.
true.
I mean, you're following the evidence generally will lead you to the right conclusion. It's still sometimes possible to misinterpret the evidence or to misread it or whatever. But it's certainly a more sound way of approaching things than just sort of faith or blind trust. We're not real big on faith here because it's a good way to be wrong. You know, you can have faith in all sorts of things, and that's not necessarily a good reason.
How can it be wrong?
Well, because you can believe incorrect things based on faith, right? And it's not necessarily a reliable path to being correct. And because you're sort of jumping to a conclusion, you're likely to jump to the wrong conclusion, because very often there's a lot of possibilities, right? And there may only be one right one, and there may be tens of thousands of wrong ones. And if you have your leap of faith, you might jump to the wrong place.
Can I ask you a question that might help, Daniel?
Yeah, sure.
Do you have faith that the Christian God exists?
Yes.
Do people have faith that Muhammad exists?
Muhammad did die, right?
Well, or
Allah.
Have people ever had faith that Zeus existed?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. I think they equally. They had faith for the same reason they were equally logical in their faith. They you can have faith that this God exists, you can have faith that God exists, you can have faith that 50 gods exist, you can have faith that whatever. We're not using faith to say we don't think that any gods exist. We're saying there's nobody that's been able to prove it yet, so there's no reason to have faith in it. So it's like I can have faith that I'm going to get home safely tonight, but I can't say that that's going to happen for sure because I don't know. I don't know.
Well, at least you have some experience of getting home correctly.
So that's the thing, is we can go with probability based off of my past experience with driving home. The statistics say that the probability of me making it home is much higher than me not making it home. But the fact is that all it takes is one time for me to not come home, and that can happen. So I have to be careful. So I have to use that information to navigate the world correctly and say, okay, the fact is I can die on my way home, so I have to make sure I try to drive safe and be careful and make sure that, somebody knows that I'm traveling. I have to take precautions because the fact is that whether I like it or not, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think from our perspective, it's important to believe things only based on evidence. And having beliefs that are not sort of backed by some evidence are kind of a liability in the sense that they may affect your behavior and these sorts of things. But if you haven't, if they're not building blocks in the sense, good building blocks in the sense that they're not, they don't have a good foundation. And if you try to have your beliefs have a good foundation and build from there, then you're going to end up being more likely to be, you know, believing things that are true versus believing things that are not true.
Right.
Does that help?
Well, yeah, that's actually a very good example. Thank you all.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, we appreciate your call. And why don't you call back another time and let us know how things are going?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Don Thanks. And Jana. Thank you.
Good luck.
Hey, good luck to you.
Have fun with it.
Okay.
Yep. It's an adventure. It's sort of maybe you feel a little cheated that oh my goodness, here I have to sort of rebuild my worldview.
Oh yeah.
And that's disorienting and frustrating and painful, I'm sure, for a lot of folks. But it's got a lot of rewards in that, you know, if your belief systems, whatever you end up with, are more likely to be sound. More likely to be based on, you know, some evidence at least. And you know, you get to be maybe a little bit better person as a result. And for me, one of the real benefits of atheism is that I find that I'm a better skeptic for a lot of other claims. So there's a lot of advertising claims and a lot of claims that politicians are making. And it's like, you know, I can more easily see through a lot of those and say, oh, well, this guy's blowing smoke or that doesn't add up or these sorts of things. And, and I, you know, I'm less likely to make a mistake. I still make a lot of mistakes. I still, you know, I'm human. I do that. But I feel like I'm in a better place because of this.
I am so much less self-centered.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because before I deconverted, I was about trying to get to heaven, right? Trying to be a good person, trying to get me and mine.
You had your goal and agenda.
Yeah, huh? And now that I don't, I'm like, oh, so I need to make sure that I try to do as many good things to help other people as I can because that's the only thing that actually does matter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
So that's just me. Right.
Yeah, it does change how you do things. So next we're going to go to Kevin in New York. You are a little bit further along in the same process, right? You've left religion.
Yeah, I was raised Lutheran. It was extremely pervasive in my life. I was at church 3 or more times a week on average.
Wow.
Involved in young adult, teen, and then later adult Bible studies. Every year during Lent, I would do a passion play. And for a couple of years, I played Jesus in it. And I did not know it at the time, but I have a touch of ASD and bipolar disorder. And my depth in the church.
I'm sorry, what is ASD?
Autism spectrum disorder, is that right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And some of the stuff that I was learning and researching, especially being as deep as I was into the New Testament, led me to make some extremely poor choices in my character development, and it led me to do some rather horrible things in my young adult life. When I started originally deconverting from Christianity, I couldn't give up the woo. I couldn't give up the need of the feeling of specialness. So I moved into Wicca, and began, using scare quotes, changing myself with what I thought was magic, which was really nothing. It was a lot of just me using
self-delusion,
real therapy that I didn't know, and a lot of self-delusion to try and fix some of these personality flaws. And I'm in a situation that I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life, having to live with a lot of the bad that I've done, the fact that I've hurt a couple of people that were very close and very important to me very badly. And now that I'm recognizing more and more that most of what I thought was a great set of guiding principles in magic is, you know, really a crock.
Well, you do have the ability to reach out to those folks and you know, sit down with them and offer a sincere apology, and they may or may not accept it, but I do think that that's a worthwhile exercise to go through. At least you will have made an effort to try to remedy some of the harm that might have happened along the way.
I've always thought that was kind of a really selfish and self-centered thing. Like,
why?
My significant other is also a former victim. She sadly has a child with the guy, and I don't know if it's just because of who he is, but a lot of what she talks about now involves a lot of the pain that she has to consistently deal with, having to deal with him, and she puts up with it for her son mm-hmm. because the guy's a good father, but she constantly carries around a huge weight and a huge load of pain that very much seems like, you know, he has been working and to continue to sort of inflict on her, you know, just to make himself feel better about it.
It seems like you're directly or indirectly associated with a lot of potential, unhealthy, mentally unhealthy situations here. And it sounds like it might be a little difficult for you to really truly extract yourself from that sort of thing and get the healing and considerations that you need to do to sort of grow and move beyond these sorts of problems.
My significant other and I are currently on a little bit of a break because of that. And my therapist is starting to push religion and spirituality back on me again. And I'm stuck in a situation where I can't just say, you know, I don't want to deal with this. This is not something that I want to hear from you. This is not the kind of help that I need because it's not real. Let me go over here and find somebody else.
Yeah.
I have no choice but to see this specific person.
Okay, that seems a little odd to me because it seems to me that therapy should be your choice. And I was going to suggest the Secular Therapy Project mm-hmm. is a place where you can find therapists who don't have an agenda like that and who will sort of take you as you are and help you with the issues kind of aside from religion.
Yeah, I'm currently on parole. Mm-hmm. And there are a set number of therapists who deal with my category of offenses.
Oh, I see.
Reading.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Have you heard of recovering from religion?
I have, but given the nature of what I've done, I don't really have access to be able to look up the resources.
Okay.
And one of the things that's been helping a little bit is listening to you guys. I was hoping maybe something would come up if I called.
Okay. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold. We have somebody in our call screening room that would like to chat with you and talk with you further and maybe give you some guidance based on their experience. So if that's all right with you, I'm going to let you go from here and I'm going to put you on hold for them to pick up. Okay.
Hopefully that person can help you.
Yeah, I very much hope so. I'd really just like to also say thank you guys
sure.
so much. Because
I just wish we could do more.
We're rooting for you.
Thanks. I know you guys have never met or heard of me before today, but there are hundreds like me mm-hmm. within a 50-mile radius of where I live that the only access that we really have to other people like us is listening to you guys and the ACA.
Wow.
Got me crying.
Got me scared.
Why?
All right. Well, good luck to you, man. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna put you on hold. And
thank you for calling.
We're gonna go to Michael in Austria.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Debating with theists, huh? And having some mixed results.
Yes, you could say that. The thing is, I often get stuck in the conversation because when I present my argument or I ask questions, the problem I get to very often is that my conversation partner says that they cannot spot a flaw or mistake in my argument, but they cannot really push themselves to agree with me.
Yeah, that happened to me a lot.
And yeah, can you give me some advice how to avoid that?
I would say that in conversations like that, you shouldn't be expecting to deconvert anybody. People, this is sort of part of their identity, part of the way they think about themselves and the way they view the world. And you can't just sort of pull that out. I think your goal might be to sow some seeds of doubt, to get them to question, and to make yourself possibly as a visible person who doesn't believe and who is doing well and, you know, a decent and good person. As a potential role model for them, or at least to dispel some misconceptions that maybe atheists are evil people. But as far as, you know, pushing them over the edge, that's expecting an awfully lot. And we haven't found that to be too easy to do.
So I saw your note earlier when I came in, and it's cut off, so Dan can't see it, or Don can't see it. But it said that you've heard of street epistemology, right?
Yes.
So your question was, when debating with theists, something, and then something about street epistemology. And I was like, oh, okay. So do you realize that debate has nothing to do with street epistemology, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So which technique are you using?
I might add that mostly I'm talking about this kind of stuff with my girlfriend and her friends because she's a believer.
Yeah.
And I am not for half of my life now. And the problems come in when we're talking about baptizing our future child or marriage or something like that. And I find it really hard to English is not my first language. I cannot really agree to the religious rituals and convictions, which I would have to agree if we want to marry.
I think it's very healthy you're having these conversations.
And so I didn't answer a question, right? The thing is, when I ask my girlfriend what would be the benefit of baptizing children or marrying in church and stuff like that, she does not really come up with an answer. And
That's the thing, but
I want to know if there's anything I could do to make it easier
So that's the thing is you can't. That's what I struggled with when I deconverted, because I assumed that everybody that I knew cared as much about truth as I did, and they don't. A lot of people only care about getting to heaven or the alternative in a different religion.
Let me expand on that a little bit. I would suggest that you focus on values. And you know, you may value truth more than she does, but there's probably many other values that you ought to talk through. I mean, you know, religion and politics and money tend to be the big things that are problematic in relationships. And you know, I would definitely start with those. Children would be another big one, right? And it seems like you're getting into that.
Well, but that person may not be ready. Is the thing, because it, like we talked about earlier, I don't know if you heard the rest of the show, but it took me 5 or 6 years before I could actually get there. And so some people, you don't know where on their journey this person is that you're talking to and starting to ask them questions. You don't know if they've never met an atheist before. You don't know if they're right on the tip. You don't know where they are. So when they're not answering and they're not thinking about it, They're not ready. Just maybe ask them different questions. Maybe wait for a different opportunity to talk about something else. But I mean, you can't make them want to have that conversation. You can't make them give you an answer. That's why we drop calls, is because we can't make people answer us.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
You know? Yeah, and you may also need to decide how important this issue is to you. Know, this may not be a deal breaker for you. There may be other things that you like about your partner that are more important and you can, you know, compromise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the curious part about this is that often as it is more important to marry and baptize children to her than to me. And so she brings up the conversation about getting married, and I say, and there are still things to be discussed. And when it comes to the point when I would like have some answers, she cannot give them because she is kind of stuck. And so I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
Because she clearly suffers from our current state of relationship, and I cannot see how I could help her.
Yeah,
but I cannot lie or pretend to agree with her because that would just make things worse.
Right, right. It sounds like it may be that her religious traditions or her religious upbringing was important to her, and she wants to give that to her children.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that you can try to maybe unpack what is the core issue there. And it may be that you guys could go to a Unitarian Universalist church or something like that that is a little bit more friendly to atheistic viewpoints and still have a religious tradition for the children. It may be that there's a compromise there. Or it may be that, she just wants to make sure that the children have proper values, that sort of thing. You know, if it were just baptism, I would say that may or may not be a big issue, but often church and religion, the family gets involved and there's a bit of a mindset of let's raise the children, let's get them sort of, you know, indoctrinated, these sorts of things, or get them hooked up with the religion and all that. And it's very often a big bundle of things and not just baptism. So that would be another thing to sort of try to figure out is whether it's just that little issue or whether it's something much bigger. And what, you know, where does it all go? You also, when you marry into a family, and those family members can exert all sorts of influences. It's not terrible, I think, for a child to be brought up in a family that has mixed beliefs for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's okay for a kid to see that, hey, my mom and dad disagree on certain things and they work it out. I think that's just fine. And it turns out that a lot of kids in those sorts of families end up being atheists because they figure out, well, you know, neither one of the religious beliefs, you know, was one I want. And it can be a way of viscerally showing a kid that they have to make up their own minds on various things. And that's really, I think, what you want in a child is somebody who will think for himself and make good decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've been in a relationship with a religious person, and you know it's sometimes hard, and sometimes you kind of want things to happen differently than they do, and sometimes your patience is well rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Be honest with yourself, though. If it's not working,
that's why I'm calling, because I don't want to be dishonest to my partner or myself, right. It seems to go nowhere. So but thank you. That was, I will think about that and maybe I call in another time.
Please do.
Awesome.
Please do.
Good luck with everything.
We get a fair number of calls like this, and it's hard to give advice sometimes. I wish I had a magic bullet that would solve these problems. But good luck to you, Michael.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Let's see. Let's go to Christy in Florida. You want to talk about older relatives and whether it makes sense to try to convert them or to talk to them about atheism. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah. First of all, I just want to say thank you guys for what you do. I love the Atheist Experience. And if it wasn't for your show, I probably wouldn't be an atheist today.
Wow.
So I'm really happy to be talking to you guys. But my issue is I come from a religious family. They're all Southern Baptist, and we all share different views, or I share different views, you know, with them. And over the past few years, I've really been trying to get them to question the things they believe, because they kind of grew up never really doing that and just going based off of what they were told. And so I've been trying to kind of, you know, throw little seeds in, kind of like, you know, the seeds of doubt that you talked about in the last call. And probably about a couple of weeks ago, I had this kind of thought or realization that maybe doing that with people like my grandmother, who is older, she's in her 70s, it might not be such a good idea. I desperately want to be able to have a genuine relationship with her, and, you know, not some fake relationship where she's, you know, thinks I'm going to hell at the end of my life. And I'd love for us to be able to have that. But at the same time, I almost think that with her having lived this way for so long and spent so much of her life as a Christian, I almost think it would be nearly detrimental to her to find out if, you know, she did decide that she was wrong this whole time. Mm-hmm. If I were in her position, I almost would rather stay blind few years of my life.
let me try to understand a little bit better. You are you out to this person? Have you told her?
I am. Okay. Yes, I'm a very out atheist. I have been for about 10 years.
So this is not a question of you having a relationship with her as an atheist, but more of a question of whether you think that you should sort of advocate for your views with her in her last stages of her life. Is that what I'm
right? Because on the off, I mean, she's very stubborn. She's stuck in her ways. It's, you know, highly unlikely that she'll ever decide, you know, that she doesn't believe in God. But, you know, I did, and I didn't think I ever would. And so it is possible. People do it every day. And, you know, in the off chance that she did actually start questioning her beliefs and did, you know, find out, you know, that God doesn't exist, like I did, it was very detrimental, and it was almost a traumatic experience for me. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to go through, to lose your religion and to lose the God that you thought you had a relationship with. And, you know, in her older years, I almost think it would be better for her to just stay comfortable in her beliefs than have to uproot everything she's ever.
Well, and you know, and you may be thinking you're more powerful than you are.
Probably.
So, well, I'm having a very, very similar experience to you now. And I don't, it won't work on my grandma. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
The more I talk to her about this, she'll tell me the further you're going up the sewer tank, you know, she'll say outright offensive things to me, and I'll say something outright offensive right back. And it's like, you know, we don't talk about it anymore. But if we do, I tell her exactly what I think, and she tells me exactly what she thinks, and we're like, yep.
Okay.
That's it. And then we change the subject. Yeah. I personally wouldn't waste time on also having experienced with family gatherings. You say that it's the majority of your family, right?
Yeah.
It's the majority of my family as well. And so if I'm thinking like Thanksgiving's coming up in a couple months, and I'm like, you know, do I even want to go? I'm a brand new atheist. I haven't been for 10 years, but not even 1 year. Mm-hmm. When I think about wanting to, make people question and represent myself in that way, that's not going to work, because I would be, you know, a lamb in a lion's pit, because the more that I'm this opposing force to them, that's the one thing that's different. And the more that I say something that sounds off to them, the more they'll cluster together and gang up on me. And that's my experience with that kind of a family dynamic. So I just don't talk about it with them. I think that I would have more progress one-on-one, and just those casual, well, what do you think about this? And not a forced, I'm going to seek you out and grill you down and try to make you question. It's hey, let's have lunch and talk about something that's not related to religion for a while. And then later on, when it comes up and you want to know what I think about it, let's talk. But if your goal is to go in there and make people question, I think that people will sense your
agenda,
your intention. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. It's difficult, you know, when you have family members that you love and you want, you know, a relationship with. It's not easy to have a relationship with someone who, you know, thinks you're going to go to hell and thinks you're living a life of sin and living right. for Satan. You know, it sucks. And it makes you, you know, yeah, a big part of me wants to just go in and deconvert her. And I, you know, I wish I could. And
I know.
Well, it sounds to me like you're,
Grandma.
you're kind of in an enviable position in the sense that it sounds like you're fairly secure in where you are. And you've got your boundaries. A lot of callers that we get that are dealing with family issues, the family's just trampling all over them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like that's the case. It may just be agree to disagree and focus on the things that you have in common and enjoy your last years with your, you know, aging relatives that way.
Yeah, she's made it this far. You know?
And I think that's a really good point. That's a very good point.
All right.
Cool. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for calling. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to clear out the calls and end the show that way. Let's see. We have Altangelo in Brazil.
Hello.
Did I pronounce that right?
Good evening. Yes, Altangelo. That's all right.
How are you? You want to talk about an alternative to a creator? Sorry.
Excuse me.
You have an idea about the creator?
Yes. Well, for me, the existence of God is one of the most obvious truths. So
I don't think it's obvious. Maybe you can help me see it.
I do. So
why?
Yes. I would like to know the alternative to a creator. Yeah. Let me finish. The alternative to a creator is no creator.
Okay.
Yep. Right?
Yep.
So either there is a creator or there is no creator. Mm-hmm. That are the two possibilities, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
So now we have to figure out what makes more sense, that there is one or that there is none.
Why does it matter what makes sense?
We care about what's true.
Well, first of all, we cannot prove ultimate reality. We cannot prove if there is a God or not.
Right.
All we can do is figure out what makes
sense. Well, we can look for evidence, and if we don't find evidence, then maybe it's a good thing not to believe in a God, right?
Because we can't prove it.
Well, the question is, what do we regard as evidence? And I would say, what we have on hand to figure out if there is a creator or not are two things. One is creation, mm-hmm. our existence, what is all around us, and second is direct revelation.
Okay. I don't consider revelation to be very reliable evidence at all.
Good. So now we can check out about existence, reality, what is around us, the universe, the earth, life. That is what exists. So the question is, why should we believe that everything that exists has no cause rather than having a cause?
Well, now, I would phrase it differently. I would say that we may not know what a cause is, but until we do, we would maybe be skeptical of any claim and say whoever's making a claim, we would look at the evidence for that claim and see whether it made sense or not. It may be that we don't know the answer to some of those questions, and in which case the proper answer is I don't know.
I don't think that is a proper answer, Don. I think this is willful ignorance.
No, it's not.
Wow.
No, it's
you're going into saying we're
it's humility.
Willful
it's
ignorance.
saying that I don't know something, and so I'm not going to make up an answer. So it's honest and it's humble.
Let me ask you something.
I'm sorry?
Let me ask you something.
Okay.
So let me ask you something. Let's suppose that you find a blueprint, a precise instruction manual, how to make a factory. And then subsequently, you see that factory exactly made upon the exact instructions of that blueprint. And somebody comes to you and asks you, what do you think? Was the blueprint and the factory made by intelligence, or did it come up by unguided random events? What makes more sense?
Wait, do you have a blueprint of the universe?
No, we have a blueprint.
No, I believe that in that case we have evidence for a designer and a that the factory is designed.
Good. mastodon. I agree with you. The cell, each cell, each living cell hosts a blueprint.
No, it's not a blueprint.
Stored in DNA.
It's not a blueprint.
It is a blueprint.
No, it's not.
What's your definition of a blueprint, Altangelo? What's your definition of a blueprint?
Let me ask.
Altangelo, what
you
is
are
your,
asserting Altangelo, it's designed when it's not.
I'm asking you a question, and I'd please, please answer it, okay? Please answer the question that I'm going to ask you, okay? What is your definition of a blueprint?
It is an instruction how to make, for example, a factory.
It's an instruction. The definition of a blueprint is an example of how to make a factory?
Yes, I'm a machine designer, okay?
So there are instructions of how to make factories in us?
Let me finish. When I sit on the drawing table, then I design a factory with the precise sizes, instructions, materials, everything that is needed, that someone can take that blueprint and then make the factory. All right?
Okay.
Okay. So DNA stores exactly the same.
No, it's not.
It doesn't store instructions of how to make a factory. I'll tell you that.
Well, a cell is a factory.
Yeah, I understand your point, but I disagree with it wholeheartedly.
Well, so you disagree with me. So my question is, what does DNA do? What does the information stored in DNA do?
DNA encodes for proteins
Why are you assuming those instructions, though? That's what I'm trying to understand. When I give
but it has
you
nothing to do with the blueprint.
I'm giving you... I'm giving you...
You said it right. It codes for proteins.
Yes.
What is that code? It's an instruction manual.
You're reading more into it than
no.
It's chemicals that have an effect.
Listen,
you're trying to put a designer in here.
No, listen. Let me finish. Let me make that clear to you. The DNA information instructs the sequence of amino acids which make proteins. The right sequence is essential. If you don't have the right amino acid sequence, you don't have functional proteins. All right?
Right, but it's not a blueprint, right? Because it doesn't have different pages with diagrams of what the final result will be and measurements and scales and all that. So it's not a blueprint, right?
Well, I say it's a blueprint in order for you to understand.
Yeah, you're using an analogy to sneak in a designer is what you're doing.
Mm.
Well, let me explain to you. You have a DNA sequence, and that DNA sequence instructs and specifies exactly the amino acid sequence that is required to make a functional protein. If that sequence is not right, you cannot have a 3D folding protein, which will become a molecular machine. It doesn't work. So you need the right DNA.
So we agree it works.
If you don't have all the pieces. So hold on. The DNA is a blueprint for a factory. Hold on.
It's a blueprint for a cell like a blueprint would be for a factory.
So if a blueprint is to a factory as a cell, as DNA is to a cell, is that what you're saying?
The information stored in DNA instructs how to make, for example, a minimal protein set which is necessary to have a self-replicating biological cell.
Right.
And you need a minimal number. For example, science says that you need at least 560 proteins, and each protein with an average size
that we know
400 amino acids.
So can you answer my question? I'm trying to understand you, but you just keep talking about other things. Are you saying that a blueprint is to a factory as DNA is to a cell?
Yes.
How do you know that those two things are equate? I'm curious.
I am trying to explain it to you. You have in DNA a sequence of deoxynucleotides.
So it looks like a map?
It is a code. you can see it as a map. I would say it is a sequence of deoxyribonucleotides, and this sequence specifies or instructs the ribosome in the cell, the sequence that has to be assembled.
So I would say that it displays, not instructs. You're saying instructs as if you're assuming that there's a personification there, either there's somebody telling me what to do. I think that what you're describing sounds to me like it just displays what's happening. And then if it doesn't work, then something's missing. And that just sounds like physics.
Yet ultimately, it's a chemical, right?
But first you have...
So do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand why I'm confused, why I'm not following what you're saying?
I'm trying.
Do you understand why I'm not following? I'm asking you if you understand me.
Okay, go ahead. Try to explain why.
I'm asking you if you understand me. If you're not trying to understand me, so this is how a conversation works. I try to understand what you're trying to say, and you try to understand what I'm trying to say, and then we see what happens. But if you're not trying to listen to me, I don't know why we're talking.
Okay, go ahead.
Explain. No, I'm already done talking. Like, I talked, and then I asked if you understand, and you're like, okay, talk.
Well, could you explain again what you don't understand?
I don't understand. When you are describing to me how you know that DNA is a blueprint, what you're telling me is it sounds like it's a map where you're saying that it's instructing me on what to do to build a cell, where I'm saying it sounds to me like it's just displaying how a cell works or exists or whatever. I don't understand why you're assuming that there's somebody there telling me to build a cell. I don't understand you. Do you understand why I'm confused? Is my question?
I am understanding you, Yana.
Okay, thank you.
I will explain in this following manner. There is nobody all the time there instructing the sequence of DNA. Okay, we have. Let's suppose. Imagine the first living cell. Okay?
Okay.
The first living cell. That first living cell needs a minimal amount of specified complex sequence stored in DNA, which instructs a minimal set of proteins which turn a cell functional.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about a cell wall, for example. Did you know that it's possible for there to be a cell without a cell wall?
Explain me, how is that possible?
There can be different types of clays that act as a type of protectant for it, or different porous materials. And so it's possible to have a minimal biological capability without a cell wall. And so it may be that this magic number that you came up with is much smaller than you think.
Well, that's not what I am saying. I am citing a science paper which was released in 2005. And
we're a lot later than 2005 now.
Michael Behe, I'm guessing?
No, it's a secular science paper. It's about what is required for a minimal cell to maintain the basic living function.
It's almost 2020.
Living today by itself, right? So
a living cell, yes, a self-replicating living cell.
And you're saying, Mike, there had to have been a god to have made that, right? That first cell.
So hold on. Altangelo, you don't believe that what Don is saying, that a cell can exist without a cell wall. You don't believe that, correct?
Well,
do you not believe that?
A cell needs homeostasis. No, a cell.
No, you don't believe that, correct?
Alive. No, I don't.
Okay, can you go look that up? And then after you look it up from several different sources online, can you call us back? And I'll look it up too. And next time I'm on, hopefully you call and we can talk. But can you go look that up and then we can continue this conversation? Because it sounds to me like he's giving you examples of why why what you're saying doesn't work.
Well, he should back it up. I want to know how he knows that that works, because I've never seen a science paper claiming that a cell can exist and be alive without a cell wall.
Well, I read that in Scientific American, and I don't recall what issue.
Well,
so,
we are just moving goalposts, because we were talking about if DNA stores a blueprint to make proteins.
And I'm saying I don't understand why you think it's a blueprint, and that's where we're starting. So before we can get further in the conversation, we have to fix that. Do you understand why?
Right.
I think I was very clear, and I would.
But
try.
You weren't. Yeah. I disagree with you. And yeah. Before, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah, blueprint's the wrong word.
Go look it up. We'll you know, maybe word it differently. But we're gonna try this again maybe later. Okay.
You know, if you have God running around in the wombs of creatures, creating you know little cells in there, then maybe there's a God. But I don't see any evidence for a God. So thank you for your call.
Thanks so much, Altangelo.
Bye-bye. All right, we got two more callers. We're going to try to finish them up real quick. Let's see. We have Trudy in California. You got some brainwashing problems.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Trudy.
I was indoctrinated as a child, and I had an experience that I can't shake. I know it's all in my head or my imagination or whatever, but still, I was seriously total obsessed with religion at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting there and I'm praying and for guidance, and I get this vision of Jesus saying, "Pick up hitchhikers." And so then that afternoon, I had to go into town. I live out in the country. And during the 10-mile trip to town, I saw four damn hitchhikers. And on the way back, one of them, you know, it was a string of cars, and I was behind them. And when my car came up, this guy jumped out in the middle of the road in front of my car and yelled, "Hey!"
Wow. Like, oh,
that's scary.
Yeah. And so this eats at me. I can't help it. And
what eats at you?
That happened.
Oh,
that,
yeah, it's, you know, scary.
Well,
do you feel like it has some deeper significance than just you have? Do you feel that it has some deeper significance than just some random guy kind of bugging you on the road?
Emotionally, but not intellectually.
Yeah,
I'm on the phone.
How long ago did it happen?
Oh, shoot, 30 years.
30 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. I've certainly had things that have happened that I don't know, gave me pause or seemed deeply significant mm-hmm. at the time and sort of left me wondering. But you know, it's a big world and crazy things happen all the time.
Yeah.
I know. Like I said, I know it intellectually, but and then, you know, I went to a Baptist church and they were big on end times prophecy. And, you know, I see now Israel is doing everything they can to make the world hate them. And
yeah. Gog and Magog, huh? Yeah. Whoever they are.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Make the whole world gather on their borders.
Yeah, those sorts of things are so vague that it's really difficult to really pin down. And it's super easy to try to read into current events. And if you want to kind of laugh, if you look up past episodes of this show, Jeff D used to do an end times thing pretty regularly, where folks were predicting the end of the world and these various things and trying to map it to the Bible. And it's almost like a hobby with some folks. And it was a hobby for him to kind of laugh at them. And there was certainly a lot of them. So it's a good business model, I think, if you want to try to be a huckster.
Okay. Oh, I wanted to say to the caller from Tennessee, was it Darren?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name. Sorry.
Anyway, he
Daniel
said there's evidence of a total worldwide flood. Well, there's evidence of floods all over the world at different times.
There you go.
Right.
There you go. Yeah, we have tree ring evidence going back long past when there would have been a flood, right? Continuous tree ring evidence.
You know, the cores. Church, and,
yeah,
the,
go ahead.
The church stressed big time how man's wisdom is not God's wisdom. And that held me back for a damn long time from thinking about all kinds of things.
Right.
That didn't relate to religion.
Kind of.
Well, ours is superior because it's real.
Jenna was saying that our wisdom is superior because it's real.
Oh, right.
I have some evidence for it. So,
but the caller from Austria is worrying about marry, you know, religious woman and because she might want to raise the kids religious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's child abuse. Don't do it.
Well, I don't know. There's shades of gray.
I think there's a spectrum. Abuse. Yeah.
It like I said, it locks your brain. It
I makes think that it can be very helpful when you do, for example, what Don said was that when you have different people believing different things in a relationship, it's much more helpful than when you say, okay, well, you should go find another religious person. Then that kid's going to have much less of a chance of finding a different way to believe, you know? So it's it may be better than the alternative. You just never know.
Yeah, that's possible.
All right, Trudy. Well, thank you for your call. We're going to try to wrap up here. We're kind of over time now.
Thanks for calling, Trudy.
We do appreciate your call.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, our last caller is Anthony from California. You are a Mormon, huh?
Hi,
yes,
Anthony.
Hi. Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Welcome.
So I'm calling because I've been thinking a lot lately. I've been watching your guys' broadcast. About a month ago, and well, you guys snapped me out of it. I am no longer, I don't believe that Mormon is the right choice or any religion in general.
All right, yeah, welcome to our
and,
club.
Yeah, so I did my research, I listened to, I respect Matt the most because he's the most logical that I've ever heard someone speak before, and I agree with him, and
you can speak that way too.
My doubts. I mean, you guys are great. I love you guys. You guys are fantastic. you guys are real. You guys are down to earth. You guys speak the truth logically with reasoning and evidence. And you guys were right. it started.
Well, so
with,
far, we as far as we know.
Yeah. So I am currently still registered as a Mormon, and one of the things that I am kind of afraid of is how do I go to the church and tell them that I don't want to be a part of it anymore? You know, it's just not, I feel like, I don't know. I get anxiety when I think about that, but in reality, I don't support it anymore and I don't want to. So how would you go about it? If you were in a religion like Mormon, which is very tight, I mean, like they really keep track of everything and they're always, I feel like they're always on to you. So
what do you mean by on to you?
So if you miss church, like I can assure you, they'll check up on you. They'll send missionaries to your house.
They'll send missionaries to your house.
Oh yeah, this is pretty invasive sort of religion.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Oh,
it's pretty
I'm
invasive.
Lucky. I just stopped going.
Yeah.
Like I'm still registered as a Catholic, and I just stopped going.
Well, you're lucky because for Mormons, it's a little bit different.
Wow, okay.
They sometimes what they tend to do, and this is what I learned from Matt, is when they come. And they give they share the scriptures. I started to notice that when I miss church, they start giving off passages from the Bible about how you must go to church and you have to do this, and if you don't go, then it's bad and all this crap. And I'm like, I feel like you guys are subconsciously bringing this subject up because you know I've been lately missing church,
yep.
And I feel like that's kind of putting pressure on me, and I don't appreciate that.
What would happen?
You're right.
Have you reached out to a group of ex-Mormons?
I actually have, but I mean, they just moved. I mean, that was their resolve was just to move and kind of.
Okay. I'm thinking more of an organization.
Mm-hmm. You can find online.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You might be able to find online forums of folks that have left Mormonism and. I would suggest starting there because they may have specific ideas and insights that we would lack. I'm not that familiar with Mormonism.
If you look up the Talk Heathen from 2 weeks ago today, I know that Eric talked about there was a Mormon that called and he gave some resources of places. Places that you can call for Mormons because of the harassment that they had experienced. And Recovering from Religion is also a really good resource because I'm sure they've dealt with this before.
That's good advice. But
pretty good advice.
You know, we can give you general advice about, you know, how to leave and reaching out to other folks. But on the Mormonism topic, I think you're better off with the experts.
What would happen if you changed your address?
Well, they do keep a record. They do have I remember the first time I think it was called the sacrament because I was converted, and they sat in a circle around me and they put like they did like this prayer. They put their hands on their heads and then they kind of sworn me in, right? And I was young. I was very naive. I didn't really know what I was doing or what was really going on. I just believed that everything that in the Book of Mormon is true. And every time I would go to church, they would end everything with Heavenly Father, and that they would always say that this church is the true church. Mm. And I feel like they tried embedding that into me. And
they did that in Catholicism too.
Yep.
Yeah. So I felt something was wrong.
Yeah.
Well,
good for you.
During that process, they did take my name, my social, all that stuff down, and then they. here's what really. Kind of like, I would say that the cherry on top was that they definitely enforce something called tithing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically you have to give 10% of your money to the church. All of your 10% of your earnings must go to the church.
Wow.
And they enforce that. Yes.
See, we were told that. We just got yelled at when we didn't.
Right.
Because Mormons are very, how do I say, like, I started to realize something was wrong by the way that they behaved, not only towards me, but towards each other. Like, it's unusual. It's not normal behavior. When I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you normally. But when they talk, it's kind of like, it's like, hey, Bob, how you doing? I was having a great day today. And it's like, okay, why are you talking like that? Like, it's creepy, you know? It's freaking me out, right?
Overly nice.
When I started realizing that this isn't normal, that's when I kind of started to realize that either you guys are too nice or you're fake, right?
Right.
Two-faced, better yet, as we call it here. I'm from LA, so we use all kinds of terms. And so I'm like, it's kind of two-faced of you guys to kind of talk the way you do and preach the things that you preach and how often you say that the church is true and that it's Joseph Smith is a real prophet. And then what also got me curious was that they also believe in a modern prophet. There is a modern prophet. It's not so. I'm like, how do you know that this guy that you're considering a prophet is really a prophet?
Yeah.
Like, what proof do you have? You don't have any other than the, like, you know, the Book of Mormon, and that I guess the 12 apostles get to select the next. I'm like, I'm not buying that crap. Yep. You know?
Isn't it funny?
Like Matt said.
Isn't it funny how the older the prophecy is, the more you can't question it.
Right. The more you can't question it.
Right. It's like if we have somebody that we could actually talk to, well, then we you know, it's questionable. But the older it is, no, we can't question that. That's
exactly. We can't question that. Trust me, I did a lot more research before I got to you guys. Before I heard about you guys, I did the research on my own.
Awesome.
I'm a computer hardware engineer, and I built myself a consumer grade quantum PC, and I ran planetary simulations using a universe sandbox software and testing out scientific hypotheses and things like that. And I'm like, you know what? This feels more accurate to me than anything I read in that whole entire Book of Mormon. Like,
well,
it just made no sense.
So try not going with what feels right. So that's the thing, is going with what feels right. These people feel fake because they're happy, or it feels wrong because it's not scientific. Like, I understand, and I think that you've come to the right conclusion, but try to be careful with using what feels right to believe what's true.
Right. Okay.
Because that's what got me to believe that religion was right, because it felt right.
Because it felt right. I see your point. Yes.
You know, okay. So anytime you know, for example, when you went, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but when you'd said that, you know, these people can't really be that happy, I'm that happy. I mean, people get really annoyed by me sometimes by how happy I am.
Okay.
So, you know, some people really are. Some people aren't being fake or, you know, so just question it. Just question everything.
Yeah.
Question everything. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay. I will do that.
So, Anthony,
I can finally live blissfully and not worry about following false religions.
Yeah. Well, we're happy for you that you're finding your way out. I've been told that the chat associated with this particular YouTube video is loaded now with resources. And if you would like to hold after I hang up here, if you'd like to stay on hold, I'll direct you to our call screeners who will direct you further. How does that sound?
Okay, that sounds perfect. I appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
All right, Anthony. Thank you for your call.
Thank you so much.
So that was our last call. We are at the ACA Free Thought Library on Koenig Lane, and you're welcome to come down and join us for dinner. We got some hungry folks here, and we're going to wind up. Thank you to Jenna, and thank you to our crew in the back. Show yourselves.
Oh, there it is.
There they are. Yay. All right.
And thank you, Don.
Thank you. Bye-bye.